He once described people's love of horror as that feeling of being afraid to put their fingers in the toaster, or somehow a secret fascination with the person who got ground up in an industrial blender.
I was warped as a child because your first emotion in both humor and horror is this sort of childish delight. It's a very low emotion, but
a lot of horror comics in my past and a lot of horror movies and that sort of thing, and it warped me as a kid. Society gives points, you know, for good emotional behavior. So we get points for exercising those emotional muscles that society approves of. Love, friendship, loyalty, humor, that sort of thing. But for every one of those good emotions, we have a dark one as well. We have fear, we have aggressiveness, we have anger. We all have, I suppose, urges that sometimes tend towards sadism, that sort of thing. People say, well, do you have bad dreams? And the answer is no, I give them all to somebody else.
You know, somebody should give me a straight shot to the jaw, and I think that would straighten me out. I would maybe stop it, but I can't stop it. It's like, please stop me before I do it again. Somebody who's got problems and fears and phobias, they go to a psychiatrist and it costs them maybe $150 an hour, and they don't even get a full hour, they get 50 minutes. I do what people pay me. This whole image is just totally overblown. I have the heart of a small boy. I keep it in a jar on my desk. Guys, if you want to sweat, I'll try to make you sweat bullets. Like Bruce Springsteen in concert. If you're going to come, come to rock.
I was warped as a child.
Welcome to Speak All Evil, the podcast you're warned about, now on patreon.com/speakallevil. I'm Trent, here with Kevin, Kat, and Dave. Hey guys, how's it going?
Hello, hello.
Hello.
This week, a figure who has transcended artistic form to become a living icon of the macabre. I'm going to say the single most synonymous name with horror in the world has to be Maine's own master of horror, Stephen King.
Woo!
Give him a round of applause, everybody. it's a big night for us to have a hometown hero on the show. Stephen, welcome. Welcome. Glad you could join us tonight. This is something that I've looked forward to my entire life. The Stephen King film adaptation is, however, a genre of its own. We could do a whole separate podcast just about Stephen King film adaptations. I'd love to just go through every single one, but we can only take them two at a time. So
I have the list.
I'd love to do them all.
In case you're curious, I went to RottenTomatoes.com and wrote down all of Stephen King's adaptations in order of best to worst, according to Rotten Tomatoes.
I think we need a spinoff podcast for that.
Or if this episode gets boring, I can just read that list and really drive it into the ground.
Kevin and Dave have agreed to curate tonight's episode. They've each chosen a Stephen King film adaptation. We're going to start with Dave tonight. Dave, what do you got for us?
It was so hard to pick this week, and I originally picked The Mist. And, of course, last week, me and Trent had a bit of a confrontation over movie picks, and he was all over me. He was like, oh, he picked The Mist. You know, this is kind of a commercially polished movie. Not my usual fare, but I did like The Mist, but he bullied me right back like I did him.
Oh.
Just he bullied me and into submission. But I decided, you know, I wasn't just going to roll over and take this kind of thing. So I was like, you know what? Fuck Trent. I'm going to pick something that's not even Stephen King. I'm going to go with something totally left field. Fuck him and his Stephen King high horse. I'm picking a story by Richard Bachman. And I picked the movie Thinner, directed by Tom Holland, starring Robert John Burke. And secondly, I'm going to say also starring Joe Mantegna, who isn't listed high when you look at the cast of the movie. He's kind of in there like he's some sort of unconsequential actor or character in this, but he was my favorite part of this whole movie. I would describe Thinner as a supernatural gangster movie based around gluttony and karma. It's set in Down East Maine, and there's a lot of familiar places to us in Belfast and in Camden where they filmed this, so it's really cool to see, you know, a street that you've walked down before. It kind of like puts you right there. So this big fat guy, really, really fat guy, and he's just gross. Everything he does is just like, ah, ha, ha, and he's just always stuffing his face with food. And he's got a beautiful family, and they're so nice to him, and they're so accepting, but they want him to be healthy, you know, and everyone's after him. You got to go on a diet. You got to lose some weight. You got to be healthy. And he's having a hard time with it. So basically, he hits a gypsy woman at night when he's driving his car, romancing while driving, which I do not recommend. And also, when we talk about misery later, I'd like to talk about, I was actually in a car accident 2 days ago. I would say my first real car accident ever. Flipped over, all the airbags went off, and the car was totaled. I was hoping that my number one fan would come to my rescue, but they didn't. But no gypsies were harmed in that accident. But in Thinner, he hits a gypsy and then uses his... He's a lawyer, and he's kind of all connected with all these people in the town and the police and the judge. So he uses his leverage to get out of, you know, a manslaughter charge or something like that. And he basically just, I don't know, he finagles his way out of it, and therefore he gets cursed. It reminded me of one of my favorite movies is Drag Me to Hell. So the gypsies in this, I had found out that gypsies don't identify themselves with any territory, but they originated in India, and they're like Indo-Aryan, and they're called Romani. And these gypsies in this movie refer to themselves as Romani, and they speak Romani. So this curse, basically, it reminded me of cannibalism, because the more he eats, he just keeps losing weight. So at first, it's like a dream come true. And then, like with anything, too much of a good thing or too good to be true, he just starts shrinking down to nothing. And he's spending the whole movie trying to track down these gypsies and get this curse reversed so that he can lead a normal life. It's very much a gangster movie. It's very silly. It's very over the top. I call it a gangster movie just because it kind of revels in that excess and the karma versus like political leverage. So I like Thinner. What did you guys think?
I absolutely love this, and I really have to take my hat off to you for this pick. Even though I know that it was a troll, I'm sure, because I was giving you such a hard time about The Mist, which had nothing to do with Offspring. Just sure. I hated The Mist that much. It wasn't like a revenge.
Please don't take your hat off. Don't take your hat off. Your head looks better covered. Oh.
It wasn't a revenge scenario, but Dave came back with like, oh, okay, I pick Thinner. And I was like, okay, good one. It's tremendous in more ways than one. I hadn't seen this in a long time. I think it was like 96. Kevin will correct us all when we get there. But this is an underappreciated Stephen King adaptation. Nobody ever says Thinner, like, oh, when you're talking about Stephen King movies. From now on, I am committed to spreading the gospel of the Thinner film. It is unabashedly trashy, greasy, it's just disgusting in on every level. You know, it reminded me a lot of, it's a long form Creepshow episode. Like this, if you took a story out of a Creepshow and you just extended it to feature length, that's Thinner. And man, I love it. Forget the prestige stuff. Forget all the big name directors that have been attached to Stephen King. Forget the CGI. Forget all of that. And do yourself a favor. It's only like $2.99 on the rental platforms. You can see this for practically nothing. I recommend Thinner. Great time. Great movie.
Did you say you recommend Thinner?
Yeah, it sounded like you said Tinder.
It's like the new, let me do that again. The new horror dating app, Thinder.
Thinder.
All right, so before I give...
I recommend Thinner. Well, hold on a minute then. Let me fix it.
Oh.
I recommend Thinner. Okay.
Oh, wow. So before I give my take on Thinner, I am curious. If each of us was cursed by a gypsy, what do you think the thing that they would do to us would be? Like, what is your thing?
They would do to me what happens in the movie Thinner. Don't you understand that? I would be the guy in Thinner.
They would make me masturbate to death.
What? I thought we weren't talking about swallowing semen anymore.
I wasn't, Kat.
He always masturbates upside down, like a bat.
I don't know.
I've never seen a bat masturbate.
I'm so sorry I asked the question.
What about you, Kevin?
I don't know. Let me think on it. Maybe that'll be my hot take at the end of the episode. You guys are right. This was 1996, directed by Tom Holland, who I didn't realize. I never knew who directed this movie. I'd seen it back when it came out. But this guy wrote Psycho 2. He directed the original Child's Play, which... I had no idea. This is not his first Stephen King foray. He turned The Langoliers, which was a novella of King's, into a film, which is a cool premise. The movie wasn't done all that great, but and this motherfucker wrote and directed Fright Night. I had no idea. So I think the reason that this works so well, like you guys are talking about, you know, describing it as trashy, it came out at a time that we on this show have heavily criticized horror. And I think it makes sense that what Tom Holland did is he took some of these 80s movies that we love and sort of mixed it with just the right amount of that mid to late 90s horror that was happening at the time. And somehow it worked. This movie was always walking a tightrope for me when I rewatched it, where I was like, it could literally fall off the rails at any moment. And somehow it doesn't. And the fat suit that Robert John Burke wears is, it's like... it's barely acceptable, but it is. And, I mean, it's not quite as good as Ryan Reynolds in Just Friends, but it was a decent fat suit. And he didn't sing I Swear, so he loses some points there. But, look, I really liked this movie. I think that the ending is awesome. I fucking love the ending, and I love the fact that you're wondering who, if everybody... ate the pie at the ending, or if somebody is going to walk away from this disaster with, you know, just totally insane. I like the gypsy aspect. It's funny you mentioned Drag Me to Hell, Dave, because that is another superior sort of gypsy curse movie, but they do have a lot in common with each other. And I don't know. I should hate this movie. I should hate the fact that Burke's performance is so slapstick, and he talks in this like Christian Bale Batman voice the whole fucking movie that I should hate, but I fucking loved it. It's a good horror movie. Joe Mantegna is so over the top as this gangster guy, and when it gets to that section of the movie, I was just waiting to be like, hey, this is so out of control. Like you said, Dave, how does this guy keep finding people, and just everywhere he goes, he's got the guns and the resources, but I don't care. This is why...
Daddy of the Week.
This is why...
Joe Mantegna.
Yeah, I guess. I have a different Daddy of the Week.
I have a different Daddy of the Week.
Anyway...
It will be revealed next movie.
Before we hear Kat's take on this, I just want to say this movie is not one of the better Stephen King adaptations, but this movie is why I'm a horror fan.
Cool. Dave, I appreciate you... as a friend, I appreciate you as a co-worker on this podcast. I hated everything about this stupid movie.
Had you seen it before?
I have never seen it before. This could have been a Twilight Zone episode, a fucking X-Files episode, and it would have been fine. Yes. You don't need this to be a 90-minute movie. I looked it up because I was like, this must have been a Stephen King short, you know, short story. No, it was a whole novel. But for some reason, it still could have been done in 25 to 45 minutes. It's 90 minutes of fat jokes and, like, body shaming, but, like, 90s body shaming, which is a different breed. I guess it's, like, in the same vein as 80s. There are no likable characters in this movie. Maybe the daughter. The daughter didn't do anything wrong. She was kind of cool. She was on One Tree Hill eventually, and she did a great job. I can't remember her name, but I'm sure it was something that sounded white. I guess I would rather watch 13 Ghosts 1,000 times than ever wow. have this movie be seen by my eyeballs ever again.
Wow.
And I'm saying it. And I'm saying it right now. Matthew wow. Lillard could come move in with me Lillard. And just recite. Sorry. Matthew Lillard could move in with me and just recite his lines for 13 Ghosts for the rest of my days. And I would rather have that happen than ever have to watch this movie ever again. Also, I'm Damn. Not sure. I don't think we should be saying the word gypsy at all. I'm pretty sure that's a slur of some kind towards.
Well, that's what they're called in the movie.
I know, but I just feel weird saying it now.
Yeah, it is.
What's the alternative? You know? What's the alternative? I'm not challenging it. I'm legitimately curious.
I don't know. Romanian people? People of Romania?
People thought they were from Egypt. So that's why they got the term gypsy. That's where the origin of the word comes from. But it became a derogatory thing as they yeah. treated these people horribly.
That's what it I'm wasn't saying. Like, yeah. So
it was
they
originally
can say
just
it,
kind
yeah.
of like, it's like Native Americans. They're not from India. These yes. guys are actually from India.
Sure. I just but, wanted to bring it up because that was like a recently learned word from me that I'm not allowed to say kind of situation. You know, like you can't.
I thought
you
it
just
would
learned
be,
it?
Hmm?
I thought it would be you a just, good... movie to watch because of that, also because of the fat shaming, because he's Richard Bachman, he's not going to get canceled.
Yeah, he's off the rails as Richard Bachman.
I should make an alter ego every time I go out drinking. I'm somebody else.
Drinking.
I just pin it on them.
That's but, your new.
You know, there's a whole bunch. This is definitely not the best Stephen King movie. I think that like The Shining is, or maybe Carrie, but he does so many different types of movies. And after the one that Kevin picked, I wanted to pick something that was some of his silly stuff.
Yes.
So I feel like he has like fantasy, action, horror. He has like folklore, macabre, realism. And then he has this like really goofy, zany, like sense of humor that I thought would be good when we talk about Stephen King for that. But it is fucked up. You know, the whole curse thing is fucked up. Like, they dehumanize them by making them mystical. You know, but not in, like, a high regard. Like, Jesus is legit, but medicine men, herbalists, and shaman are, like, heretic, crazy people, you know?
Yeah.
So I agree with that. And I don't think it's the best movie. I do think it's a fun movie to watch as a horror fan, as a fan of someone that wants to be offended.
And I appreciate the pick. I'm not saying it shouldn't have been a pick at all. I think it's important to show that Stephen King movies can... Richard Bachman movies can also go off the rails. They're not all going to be The Shining.
Right.
As a person of density myself, I didn't really find it like... I was waiting for more shaming and like fat jokes. I didn't really get the I didn't really see any humor that was at the expense of being a person of density. It just seemed like he was, you know, he was trying to lose weight because of the health reasons, and his wife was very supportive. Like, nobody was calling him like lard ass or anything like that. It was just like, you know, he was trying to slim down, he was on a diet, he's drinking the shakes, you know, a very relatable type of thing. And then when he found out that he could eat all he wanted and still lose weight, then, you know, that then it became like a reflection of his character, of him as a person, that he was a gluttonous type of person, not at the expense of his physical density, I thought.
The one thing I like about this that we haven't really dug into is the white man power. You guys were kind of heading there with the debate, but the fact that our main character, Billy Halleck, played by Robert John Burke, he is a lawyer. And he is a defense lawyer who gets Joe Mantegna's character off doing some shady shit. But when he hits then you see the white power, or the old white man power converge. And the judge is in on it. The cops are in on it. You know, even Stephen King in his great cameo as the pharmacist is in on it. And they basically,
Bangor.
Yeah, Dr. Bangor. They basically let this guy off. And I've been listening to like a lot of wrongful conviction podcasts lately. Just throw that out there. But it was a perfect time to watch this movie and to, you know, sort of see in a much more slapstick way or non-serious way. But just to watch, like, they do it in this movie in a very not, like, super serious way. But that shit's real, man. That shit really happens. And I thought it was very interesting. And it was definitely a part of the racial or ethnicity part of it, where these powerful white men were just super willing to be like, we don't care about this group of people that are passing through our town. We care about our homie. And we're going to get him off, and then we're going to go have dinner, and we're all good.
But I mean, really, like, who walks away from this movie thinking that the main character is a good guy or any of those people are good guys? I mean, you guys often, we watch movies, and you're like, oh, man, that's a piece of crap. I can't believe you like that movie. That horrible person was doing that horrible thing. But most of the time, it's like they're shining a light on rich white douchebags that use their power over minorities, and that's something that we've been trying to drive home for a long time. And I thought for, you know, 96, I mean, that's, there wasn't a lot of that.
He gets his retribution. So there's like evil characters that are being shown doing the wrong things, and they get their comeuppance in the end.
Sure do.
Not to spoil thinner for you, but there is a comeuppance. And speaking of Stephen, you mentioned the Stephen King cameo. I think that this is the best Stephen King cameo. As the pharmacist in this movie, he is perfect weirdo small town pharmacist. And he has a pretty meaty, so to speak, role in this one. Like, it's not just a quick, you know, a quick cut. He's really in there. Well, so I really appreciated that.
Well, everybody involved in the courtroom. So we should clarify that it's not just Billy Halleck that gets a curse placed on him. It's everybody involved with the cover-up of the crime. And I was always curious, everybody in that courtroom was cursed in different ways. It wasn't just, you know, the world's greatest weight loss program. But Stephen King. How does Stephen King not get you know, lumped into this curse thing? That would have been fucking awesome. He, like you said, he could have looked like the guy from Creepshow.
Why would he? He was the pharmacist. Why would he be cursed?
Because he was on the stand.
Because he said that she went running out of the store, and she did not go running out of the store.
See.
He lied.
Right. Okay, right. That's true. I forgot about that. Right.
My personal mommy of the week would have to be Kari Wuer, because I had a huge crush on her. She was on MTV, this game show called Remote Control, and she always did like the spring break things.
Hell yeah.
Like right in my pubescent prime. And she meant a lot to me.
Same.
And all those feelings came rushing back when I watched this again.
I would challenge that Kathy Bates is definitely mommy of the week.
Yeah, that's tough.
In different ways.
Gotta be Kari Wuer.
I guess just circling back a little bit, it wasn't, I think the things that bothered me the most when it was like fat shaming, quote unquote, it was when he was starting to like lose that weight. And so then every single time, like that, what was that line? It was like, oh, you finally found a diet that works, you know, over and over and over again, every person that he had interacted with. And I'm like, I'm like in that zone right now. And it just like sucks when it's like around every corner, it's someone being like, oh, it's like fucking, you know, my landlord. Oh, did you lose weight? I'm like, yeah, Jody, I did. That's, you don't have to talk to me about it anymore, you know? Like,
I think that's a good public service announcement. You don't have to comment. Like, if somebody, if you think that they've lost somebody, first of all, you don't know if they've been sick.
Yeah.
You don't have to comment on weight loss or gain. You can just not.
You can just shut your fucking mouth.
You can just not say anything about, and you can just go on. Maybe they will.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't have to.
Have you ever heard a recording of you talking about something and you're just like, oh my God, like, I sound terrible. That's what it's like if you don't know you're being recorded.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like if people that do these things and say these things see characters in a movie like Thinner saying the same shit that they say, like, oh, what's your secret to your new diet or lost a few pounds? You know, like, yeah. If they're that kind of person and they're watching this, they're like, oh shit, like, that's me. Mm-hmm. I'm that horrible character. Maybe I should stop doing this.
No, it's probably validating it for them. What I would say is, before you comment on something, think about whether you would comment on the opposite. So if you would walk up to somebody and say, hey man, looks like you put on a shit ton of weight. Well, then don't do the opposite, because you wouldn't walk up to somebody and be like, yo, you got fat. But you would walk up to somebody and be like, hey, have you lost weight? They both kind of cut in the same way. So before you comment on somebody's appearance or mannerisms, ask yourself if you would comment on the opposite of what they're doing or what they look like.
Caitlin is very skinny, and she gets all the time. People are like, eat a cheeseburger.
Yeah.
And, you know,
ridiculous.
And she's like, I just ate three cheeseburgers.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't do that. And the other way, you wouldn't be like, don't eat that cheeseburger.
Yeah, stop eating cheeseburgers.
It's an overweight person.
Like, it's just
don't eat that cheeseburger.
It's just the way that we've been conditioned, you know, and I'm not going to... I feel like I talked about this a lot in the body blaming episode. Throwback, so far away.
It's been a long time. So long. Always good to re-up.
But it's like everyone's just so conditioned that thin is good. You know, it doesn't matter. So they can say whatever they want as long because you're thin, you know, kind of situation. It just... I think moral of the story is that I just hate everyone, but I hate this film more than everyone.
You know, so Dave, you mentioned Drag Me to Hell. If I can just throw in one more, what I think is interesting. Sam Raimi is a favorite of yours, and he did the Drag Me to Hell movie. So this movie was actually originally set to be produced by Dino De Laurentiis, who we would know as producing Serpico, Death Wish, 75's King Kong, Halloween 2 and 3, Firestarter, Evil Dead 2, Army of Darkness, Hannibal Red Dragon. And he had tapped Sam Raimi to direct this movie. But they were too deep into Evil Dead 2 to be able to properly commit to Thinner, which is how it landed in Tom Holland's hands. So we could have had a Richard Bachman / Stephen King Sam Raimi directed version of this movie, which I would have loved to have seen.
Well, you have Drag Me to Hell instead.
Exactly.
Same deal.
It's very much like the same story, or it seems like a Stephen King tale, the Drag Me to Hell.
I feel like people like Sam Raimi had never forgotten about it, and so he just decided to sort of do his own version of Thinner years later.
Do we know if Raimi wrote Drag Me to Hell?
I don't know.
Good question. With Stephen King, a lot of the silly stuff is actually, to me, the most conscious, because there's always this cautionary tale.
I feel like he always has almost everything with him is a morality tale, so much so that sometimes, like, it's a little bit annoying to me. Sometimes in the way that he gets a little bit ham-fisted sometimes. Like, I get it. That was one of my problems with The Mist, was like, yeah, I get it. Okay, I know. There's no authority. There's a breakdown, and people are turning to fundamentalism and violence. Okay, like, I understand, you know, this little after-school special, but, you know, then there's times where he does it well. So I think there's always a strong moral core to Stephen King's work across the board.
What The Mist and Thinner do have in common is it's like all like TV actors. It's like everyone is from an episode of CSI or
Criminal Minds or something. Dude.
But both movies have that. There's like some people from The Walking Dead in The Mist.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was Frank Darabont who started The Walking Dead and also did, you know, some pretty classic King.
But I still stand by The Mist. I like The Mist, but I decided to go with a silly comedy.
I'm glad you did.
Parody.
I'm glad you did.
And by the way, Drag Me to Hell was written by Sam Raimi and his brother Ivan. So the second Stephen King movie of the week was Misery. This is a 1990 film directed by Rob Reiner, which, believe it or not, I never knew this movie was directed by Rob Reiner, because Rob Reiner is known for doing things like Spinal Tap, When Harry Met Sally, The Princess Bride, A Few Good Men, and also another great King adaptation, Stand By Me, which for me has to be up in the most watched films of my entire life. So this one has James Caan as Paul Sheldon, who is an author, and he is finishing his new book just as his last book is about to be published. And his last book is a continuation of a series that he has done of a character that the country has embraced, and her name is Misery Chastain. While he's coming back from finishing this book, he gets into a terrible car accident, happens to be discovered by his biggest fan, who is a nurse, and takes him back to her house to, quote unquote, nurse him back to health. That nurse is played by none other than Kathy Bates in her first major role. And Kathy Bates, speaking of horror at the Oscar, won the Academy Award for Best Actress for this movie. I love this movie. I love Kathy Bates. I think that James Caan does a great job. What did you guys think?
James Caan.
Did you say James Caan?
James Caan.
I don't pronounce anything right, okay? So just, I mean, I'm immune to this at this point.
Thank God for this movie this week, because I was, after Thinner, I was like, I need a really good one, and thank God it was Misery. It's just so good. Like, Kathy Bates, I feel like we're just going to be talking about Kathy Bates for the whole episode. She's just so good. She starts off so sweet, and you're like, if I didn't know what this movie was about, I'd think you were just totally cool. And it's just like the little parts when she starts to unravel, like when you start to see, like the first like thing that she did was when he starts to like realize that maybe he's kind of in a fucked up situation is when she like starts freaking out about how he uses like profanity, and like she starts like spills like the soup she's feeding him, and you kind of see like in his eyes he's like, oh shit, what am I, like I thought I was just being saved by this woman, but I might be in a very serious situation. It's like just spooky enough but also like relatable somehow, because you're like, what would you do in this situation? Like, what if you were James Caan and you're like trying to be nice to this person because you don't want to be stuck there, but you also don't want to get murdered, like, once you realize the situation you're in. But yeah, I also, so my daddy of the week would obviously be Buster, the sheriff, obviously.
Yeah. Nice.
He's the daddy of the week, yes. I want him to be my grandpa in a not sexy way, I will say. Or a sexy way. I mean, I like, that was a nice, like, little mustache, like, situation he had going on. But I was also wondering, I guess we could get to this later, but if you guys want to start thinking about it, if you guys have ever had any misery moments, I'd love to hear about them.
Well, my chance for a misery moment was the car crash the other day. And I would have loved for someone to just like scoop me up and like hold me up in some studio that they made in their house and make me record an album for a month. Like, that's a dream for a starving artist. This guy was just kind of ungrateful, I think. No, but I love Misery. I've always loved Misery. It's a beautifully executed minimalist movie and story. And, you know, from like a writer's standpoint, there are scenarios that you imagine, you make up something, you know, intangible and disconnected from your own experience. And then there are horrors that are autobiographical, So I like that, you know, Stephen King is writing about a situation that is a worst case scenario from his own perspective. Like, these types of stories kind of convey the fear of what scares Stephen King. Like, this is something that might happen to him. So I really like that dynamic of it. And I loved how simple it was. And I think it was simple because of that unique perspective that he had on this type of horror. I also thought it was very woke. Unlike the last one, they mentioned climate change in 1990.
Yeah.
They're talking about the ozone layer.
Yeah.
Annie Wilkes was doing what Donald Trump is accusing Joe Biden of, is like killing the babies right when they come out of the mom. She was doing that. His typewriter could not type any, it didn't have an N. So you got no N words.
Wow. Very progressive. So this, very progressive film.
This movie was very progressive in a lot of ways like that. And, you know, I can't even, I don't even feel like I need to talk about Kathy Bates' performance. But everyone's performance in this was great. And there was only like five people in the whole movie.
Well, I have a long personal relationship with Misery. I've long considered this to be one of the very best Stephen King adaptations ever. I first saw this movie when I was 19 years old, and I watched it, I'm going to say, roughly estimating tens of times, because I was living in Eustis County, Maine, in the middle of nowhere, and there's no TV, there's like one classic rock radio station, and there was a little video store, like in the front of someone's house or something in the middle of nowhere, and we rented Misery one night, my roommate rented it. Watched it, blown away, thought this is the one. This is better than any of the Stephen King movies. And my roommate kept it for some reason, just laziness, just never brought it back. So we would watch it like night after night. It just became like a show to us. It was either listening to music or watching Misery. And eventually the sheriff came one day in person on duty to get the movie back, you know,
that used to happen
in full regalia. Not.
Knocked on the door. My roommate gets up. It's like a couple of futons and a bunch of beer cans, like total dump. My roommate gets up. He has no shirt on. Opens the door, just like a Maine County Cops episode. And the sheriff gave him the option of either I can give you a ride to the video store right now and back, and you can return the movie, or I can arrest you.
That used to happen to me all the time at my parents' house. That's a
Are
real thing.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Yeah, for you'd real? Return a movie for like months.
Come get you.
The police would come to your house.
Eventually, they have no other recourse. Like, we got to get
they
this movie back.
They can't just charge you for the movie and then buy a new movie?
It didn't work like
no,
that.
No, it was cash.
Back, they had
this
to send
a cash
covered wagon
exchange.
That's very stressful. I'm glad we are not living that way anymore.
Kat, you asked about an Annie Wilkes fan moment, and
yes,
I would
please.
Just say that this is the first time, probably since those days, that I've watched this. So this is the first time I was able to see it from any kind of personal life experience, because I wouldn't say I've ever dealt with an obsessed fan, but I have dealt with some obsessed people. And it struck me right from the first scene where the Paul Sheldon character is talking to his agent, and he refers to the character of Misery in his books like a real person. He's like, I can't wait to get away from her, or something like that. Can't wait to have her out of my life. And I realized that, you know, this movie, in some sense, you don't have to be an author to understand or have super fans. You can have just a super needy, obsessed person who you've got to get away from. But again, if like you were saying, if you're too mean, they can try to do things back to you and hurt you in ways. So you have to be very careful. You're dealing with someone like Annie Wilkes, which I have dealt with personally. It is a very uncomfortable situation. So I can relate to this movie even more now. Top three Stephen King adaptations all time.
The whole time that this this book came out in 1987, and Thinner that we just talked about came out in 1984. And King was actually writing this book under the moniker of Richard Bachman, like he did with Thinner. Because what King was doing is, this was in Stephen King's absolute insane phase where he was pumping out so much material that he and his publisher were worried about oversaturation. That's why he created the Richard Bachman pseudonym. And he was crippled with substance abuse. So years later, after claiming that this was merely an exaggeration, like you guys are talking about, of his fears of his biggest fans and, you know, how relatable it is, he admitted that this book was really about his substance abuse problems and that Annie Wilkes is actually the representation of his illness, keeping him, quote unquote, in bed.
Wow.
So, and one thing they left out of the movie is Paul Sheldon in the book actually has a lot more substance abuse issues. So Trent, like you said, you can view it from that lens, from a needy thing. Dave, like you said, you can view it from a person of accomplishment that you run into your biggest fan and all of a sudden they're super obsessed with you. And now they have you in the house and you can't get out. But it's actually a big Stephen King therapy session of trying to shed himself of his own substance abuse problems.
I always get jealous when I read about and hear about Stephen King's drug days. Like, he had it made and he just would crank out. All he did is get up, like, do some coke, smoke some weed, I think he smoked butts, and then just write like a madman all day. And I start drinking beer and write some more, do some more coke, drink some more beer. And that's just all he did every day. And put out books and make millions of dollars.
It was like my quarantine minus the books and the millions of dollars.
I'm drooling.
Yeah.
My mouth is watering.
It must have been so hard to give that up.
A great life.
Yeah, imagine giving that up.
Stephen King wouldn't actually sell the rights to this book, but he was so impressed with Rob Reiner's take on Stand By Me that he sold the rights to this book. But again, and we've talked about King in the past and some of the fucked up things he's done, like selling, the rights to Carrie for like $2,500. He put a clause in his rights selling of this that the only way he would sell the rights to this book is if Rob Reiner either produced it or directed it.
Yeah, you already had the proven commodity. I feel like when you think about why people have made so many bad Stephen King adaptations, it's tempting to look for an excuse. And at one point I was thinking, well, if you look at the good ones, the huge hits and the enduring classics like Stand By Me, like Misery, like Shawshank Redemption, they're less fantastical. They're people that have focused on the smaller, simpler, more human stories and not so much on dead cats coming back to life and stuff like that. That's kind of hard to take out of the Stephen King written universe and put that on a screen without just being ridiculous. I think that's really difficult. But then again, I look at the first one, Carrie, maybe still the best one. Brian De Palma had no problem with it. So I don't know why there are so many bad Stephen King movies. I guess I would just probably think that he's so popular and so many people have tried that just by virtue of numbers, they're just not all going to be great. This one you can only rent right now on Fandango and Redbox online.
It's also pretty cheap to just buy outright on Amazon for like $6, which I happily did so that I can just have that in my library.
There was a time when all of these lines from this movie were kind of iconic. The cock-a-doodle car and, you know, sort of some of the funnier colloquialisms of Kathy Bates. It really entered into this sort of early 90s cultural lexicon more than you would remember now being 2020.
I like how the swears kind of dictated how angry she was, because she was very against swearing. So she'd say the cock-a-doodle and the dirty bird and all that stuff. But then when she actually swore, you were like, oh, shit. Like, she means business.
There is one aspect that I would like to talk about concerning the casting. And again, we're going to have to go back to 90s mindset. But the role of Paul Sheldon, if you're to believe it, because there's 8,000 different articles that claim one thing or another. But the fact that James Caan got this role apparently is amazing, because it was offered allegedly to William Hurt, to Kevin Kline, Michael Douglas, Harrison Ford, Dustin Hoffman, De Niro, Pacino, Dreyfus, Gene Hackman, Robert Redford, you name it. And none of them wanted to take it because it was a very obvious script where the Kathy Bates character of Annie Wilkes was the star. And these actors did not want to be in a film where they would be overshadowed by a up-and-coming female actress.
I could see the pitch like, oh, man, so there's a part, you know, Rob Reiner's doing this Stephen King book, Misery. Oh, really? Yeah, what's the part? Well, you're in bed. Oh, so I started. Now you're just in bed the whole time. What do you mean the whole time? You don't get out of bed. You're just laying in the bed, and Kathy Bates goes crazy. Oh, and then she breaks your legs though. You can't get out of the bed. You're just in the bed the whole time. And they're like, oh.
You know, I think it's actually a similar role. The dynamic of Kathy Bates still in that show was James Caan early in his career in The Godfather.
Yeah,
I felt like he was against all these super actors, you know, Marlon Brando, Al Pacino. It's considered one of the best movies of all time, and he was pretty much a newbie at that point. So it was cool that he let her shine because she definitely shines. And I think as a good actor, it shouldn't be a tug of war. It should be whatever is best for the movie.
She's very believable. She seems almost like someone you know. I mean, she really embodies the role so completely that she's even like, even though she's really scary and everything, she's so realistic in her portrayal that sometimes it's almost like, oh, she's looking good today. You know, there's a couple scenes where you know, she's bubbly, she's really happy, and you're like, oh, yeah, you know, hey. Ooh. I mean, you're in bed anyway, you know?
Oh.
But no, you don't want to get deeper with a case like this.
I never read the book, but Kevin, you read the book, right?
Yes.
Is the book any sexier? Because I was surprised that... No, I'm serious. I'm surprised that she was so in love with him and she had him at her, you know, he was very vulnerable.
Yeah.
No, absolutely not. There is no sexy time with Annie Wilkes.
That's too bad.
0%. There's, you know, we don't have to worry about anything like that with good old Annie.
Now, Trent, you're single. You're the only single member on the show.
That's right, and I try.
Unless you have one of those guys who has a secret girlfriend, some people
swinging so, single, baby, ladies.
Your dating experience, you go home with a girl, you go home with a woman, and you get to her house, and she starts putting on her Liberace records. Mm-hmm. What does that mean to you? What's going to happen?
Well,
what's about to go down?
Probably at that point, by the time you're at the home, it's a little too late to back out. There are times when there's a threshold where it becomes easier, even if you change your mind internally, emotionally or physically, there's a point at which it's easier to just plow through and come out the other side. Because you'll come out the other side of it with less damage if you just... Now, go through with it, and then you get out of there in the morning, whatever. Hopefully, you get out of there.
It takes this guy 2 months to start batting his eyelashes at this lady. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's what ultimately saved him, is he's tried to, like, seduce her. I would have been there. As soon as she put on those Liberace records, I would have been, all right.
Well,
this over with. I got to go home.
You got to remember that she's drugging him the entire time.
Oh, the whole time.
True.
Has anyone else watched the Hulu show Castle Rock?
No.
I started watching it and I was like...
The first season is difficult to get through. The second season has Lizzie Kaplan starring as a young Annie Wilkes. It gives us a full Annie Wilkes backstory.
Shh.
And Lizzie Kaplan is unbelievable as Annie Wilkes.
I didn't know that.
So if you want to know...
We were just talking about how we hate that.
What's that?
How someone just like extracts a character and makes up their own story like it's their character.
Yeah, but this wasn't like 30 years ago. This was like, it just happened.
I do hate that.
That's even worse.
Yeah, I don't like that when people do that.
But
like, did Stephen King write the story of Annie Wilkes as a baby?
No.
Is he a part
some
of
other
it,
guy
maybe?
Did. Some guy, I don't know, some guy, Jimmy Wilkes wrote it. Who cares?
Yeah, they're just kind of riding on his coattails and taking his story
Richard
and making up some
Bachman.
New story.
Yeah, I know. I'm going to do an origin story of Paul Sheldon. Here you go.
That's a great idea. Paul Sheldon. Why don't you do that? That's a good idea.
I would just try to start a conversation about that, you know, that stuff's done. Some people are betrayed by it, and other people are fine with it. I just seeing where are you at on that, Kevin?
Kevin, you like when people make up a backstory, I think, a little bit more than me.
It depends. If it's done well. I think it depends on the character. Like Dave just asked if, you know, there was any sexy time or anything. I think that a very important part of understanding Annie Wilkes is understanding her backstory and why there might not be some sexy time.
Oh,
if you're talking about a less fleshed out character like a Michael Myers or something, I don't necessarily need an in-depth backstory. Part of his mystique is his mystique. So it's a case by case basis, but someone like Annie Wilkes, fuck any Stephen King character. Let's put it that way. Any King character, you're going to want to delve in because he crafts such great characters.
You could say it's a Bates by Bates casus. Yeah.
I would never say that. No.